Hello, everyone. This is Robert Velasquez podcasting for wholesurgical.com and diabetics treatment.com for that matter. And today we'll be asking, can type 2 diabetes be corrected with bariatric surgery? The prevalence of diabetes type 2 and obesity has increasingly grown in tandem worldwide. As of today, the most effective treatment for severe obesity that can achieve long-term weight loss is bariatric surgery, particularly for those who have tried other ways to lose weight, such as dieting and exercising. Given the high association between these two pathologies, the concept of diabesity has been utilized to describe patients who are severely obese and diabetic at the same time. Type 2 diabetes is associated with serious health consequences. The development of type 2 has a strong association with obesity, sedentary lifestyle, genetic factors, and other associations of diabetes. Faced with this problem, bariatric surgery has evolved as the treatment that produces a greater decrease in body weight long term. Moreover, it's postulated that bariatric surgery currently may have a beneficial effect in improving pharmaceutical treatment and even promoting diabetes remission in obese patients. The surgical technique that offers the most benefit has been the root and Y gastric bypass, which is why it's the technique of choice among of many obese and diabetic patients when presented with options. A meta-analysis reported that gastric bypass presented a remission of diabetes type 2 of close to 60% of cases, while a gastric band has allowed remissions of 29% of cases in the first year. A diminution of glycemic levels, basal insulinemia, and glycosylated hemoglobin has also been observed. Thus, many patients can lower the use of oral hypoglycemic sulfonamides to fight diabetes. A group of metabolic intestinal hormones called incretins play a central role in the remission of diabetes type 2, along with weight loss and postoperative dieting. Incretins stimulate the secretion of postprandial insulin and are associated to the physiological mechanisms produced as a consequence of gastric bypass procedures that regulate or improve glycemic levels. The role of bariatric surgery. Weight loss procedures have permitted an important reduction of body weight in the long run. Unlike other types of medical treatment, there are different surgical techniques at play: restrictive, malabsorptive, and mixed. The first gastric surgery that reported an improved control of diabetes took place in 1955, but it wasn't until 30 years later that the procedure was considered clinically important. In the 1980s, it was observed that gastric bypass surgery is associated to improved glycemic and insulinemic levels of around 77% to 97% during oral glucose tolerance tests. Today, bariatric surgery is recommended for patients whose reiterated treatment plans have previously failed, present a BMI between 35 to 40, or a BMI greater than 40, regardless of the presence of a chronic disease, and have a medically relevant pathology whose prognosis is affected by obesity, such as arterial hypertension, diabetes, sleep apnea, and many others. The root and Y gastric bypass improves not only weight, but also ameliorates insulin resistance and improves glycemic levels. Surgical candidates should be rigorously evaluated by a medical team in order to ensure postoperative compliance and proper progression. On the other hand, patients for whom bariatric surgery is contraindicated are those that suffer from cardiac insufficiency, severe respiratory insufficiency, psychiatric disorders such as psychosis, inflammatory intestinal diseases, malabsorption syndrome, pancreatic insufficiency, and several more. Now, the complications of bariatric surgery, like any surgery, there can be complications. Although the rate of complications is relatively low, in the case of bariatric surgery, major complications occur in less than 10% of cases. They can cause significant disability, even though the rate is low. So, surgeries whose outcome adversely affected the patient have provoked claims of malpraxis, which are particularly problematic for bariatric surgery centers. For these reasons, performing surgeons should be well prepared and possess and possess the exceptional technical skills required to handle complications when they occur. Physiological reserves are significantly reduced in obese patients, and by extension, patients who seek bariatric surgery. As a result of their excessive mass, their bodies do not express possible complications clearly. For example, in people with normal BMI, peritonitis symptoms include tachycardia, fever, abdominal pain, and a high white blood cell count reading from a complete blood count as a consequence of sepsis. However, obese patients may just show tachycardia despite possible sepsis. Of all likely manifestations of intra-abdominal sepsis, a BPM reading of more than 120 is the most reliable finding in obese patients. So, for this reason, when post-op bariatric surgery patients present any signs of tachycardia, the medical professional in charge should assume that an intra-abdominal abscess or an anastomotic leak may exist. Imaging studies for the purpose of confirming such a suspicion are difficult to observe and tend to be less reliable due to the size of obese patients. Like any surgery, bariatric procedures carry a certain degree of risk for possible postoperative complications, especially the first 2 months after surgery. Common complications that have been observed during this time are embolisms, infection of the surgical wound, incisional hernias, and fistulas. On the other hand, possible complications after a vertical sleeve gastrectomy are minor when compared to a Roux-en-Y. However, they can present secondary vomiting from overeating. Besides secondary vomiting, they can also have intestinal stenosis, ulcers, and pouch dilation as well. After 2 months, a different set of complications can begin to appear. These include nutritional, hepatobiliary, and dermatological symptoms. Bariatric surgery can produce nutritional alterations as a result of anatomical and physiological change to the digestive system. As a consequence, this procedure will produce a change in the quantity and quality of the diet, which in turn triggers the development of vitamin and mineral deficiencies. In general, it's very difficult for patients to consume over 1,000 calories a day after the first 2 months post-op, which doesn't cover the daily requirements of vitamins and minerals. Now, let's talk about post-op, the physiological changes that take place. So, various studies have detailed the intestinal hormonal changes that take place, especially that of incretins. These are vital to the homeostasis of glucose and effects on satiety. Among them, we can highlight glucagon-like peptide 1, or GLP-1, and gastroinhibitory peptide, or GIP, both of which have demonstrated improvement of insulin secretion in diabetes type 2 patients. GIP is secreted by the K cells of the proximal small intestine, whereas GLP-1 is secreted by L cells of the distal portion of the small intestine. Weight loss procedures, such as liposuction, have not demonstrated a relationship with an increase of incretin production. Rather, it is gastric bypass surgery itself that is responsible for the elevated secretion of GLP-1. One hypothesis suggests that higher production of incretins is triggered by exposure of the small intestine to nutrients. After an ileal interposition surgery in rats, they presented a persistent increase of GLP-1 in plasma, as well as a heightened expression of mRNA for proglucagon in the ileum. Another hypothesis is called the foregut hypothesis, which proposes excluding the proximal jejunum and the duodenum in the hopes it will inhibit a signal that promotes insulin resistance. This inhibition by exclusion is what happens after a gastric bypass procedure. It results in improvement of the body's sensitivities to insulin, normalized glycemia levels during fasting, and better results from an oral glucose tolerance test. In a study of rats published in the Annals of Surgery in November 2006, a group of scientists attempted to demonstrate the differences between a duodenal jejunal bypass, or DJB, and a Roux-en-Y procedure with regards to their effects on the interaction of the small intestine with nutrients, and how this interaction triggers a cascade of insulin regulation mechanisms. The rats that underwent a Roux-en-Y presented a better response to OGTT, which is oral glucose tolerance test. Then, so they presented a better response to that than the DJB group. And again, DJB is duodenal jejunal bypass. Although they were both helpful in controlling glycemia, researchers concluded that anti-incretins produced in the proximal intestine can contribute to diabetes type 2 phenotype, while the exclusion of this portion would actually reduce the effects of diabetes. If there are more anti-incretins than incretins, it can result in hypoinsulinemia and an eventual shortage of pancreatic beta cells. Hence, this study successfully showed that the incretin system can be balanced out at the expense of the proximal segment of the small intestine by way of excluding it, which would explain the resolution of diabetes type 2 post-DJB. Different studies have described the improvement of insulin resistance in post-surgery patients who underwent metabolic surgery to achieve weight loss. Given that adiposity is a determinant of insulin sensitivity, it was verified that weight loss indeed improves insulin tolerance. Weight reduction also produces a diminution of pro-inflammatory cytokine markers, such as C-reactive protein, or CRP, and interleukin-6, or IL-6, as well as improving adiponectin levels. Higher adiponectin levels mean better sensitivity to insulin. We should also highlight the importance of diabetes type 2 evolution. Since the normalization of the effect of incretins can persist for a whole year after surgery, insulin secretion in diabetes patients can be very variable, depending on factors such as age, family history, current illness duration, and level of insulin resistance. For obese patients over the age of 40 who are diabetic, the resolution of their condition is rare, since it appears that the pathogenesis of hyperglycemia and morbid obesity compared to moderate obesity is different. In a study led by Hall, it is suggested that the evolution of diabetes of 10 years or more with bad glycemic control would present poor remission rates. So predicting factors for successful remission are weight loss of at least 30% in 6 months post-op and a short duration of diabetes pre-op. However, it has been observed that diabetes patients who underwent metabolic surgery and showed improvement of their glycemic levels have also presented a recurrence of diabetes. It is thought that regaining weight after bariatric surgery can be the main cause of this recurrence. This has been reported to be the case 2 or 3 years after surgery. Regaining weight can be favored by the loss of control of healthy food intake and with it the return of inappropriate dieting behaviors or the consumption of foods that have a high glycemic index. Nowadays, bariatric surgery represents an effective line of treatment against morbid obesity in conjunction with remission of diabetes type 2. As a consequence, remission rates can be as high as 80% when the improvement of glycemia is concomitant with significant weight loss. The procedure most associated with remission of diabesity is the Roux and Y gastric bypass technique. There's still much left to investigate about the physiological changes that are produced post-op, since there are still discrepancies present in some studies. Furthermore, current research reveals that remission of diabetes 5 years after the operation decreases notably, for it is already being reported that diabetes type 2 can reoccur in up to 43% of cases. So that's it for today. That was Can Type 2 Diabetes Be Corrected with Bariatric Surgery? Again, this is Robert Velasquez podcasting for diabetics treatment and wholesurgical.com. And until next time, thanks again.